Where have all the cruise ships gone? They were a long time coming. You know, it's important to remember, they didn't come here by chance. In the 1980s, the Honorable Grace McCarthy set her sights on building a sustainable tourism business, and she knew the growing Alaska cruise ship industry was a perfect fit. She worked with the feds and built Canada Place in Vancouver, not just as a convention center, but also as a world-class cruise ship terminal that would bring millions of passengers and their money to British Columbia. In the 1990s, the focus expanded to include rebuilding Ballantyne Pier and to include Victoria, and it worked brilliantly. Central to the success of the campaign is a provision in the Jones Act called the Passenger Vessel Services Act, which requires ships carrying passengers to stop at a foreign port between two U.S. ports. This provision means Vancouver and Victoria are perfectly located in the Alaska cruise ship industry. Ships could travel from Alaska to BC and back again, or Alaska, BC, and Seattle and back again. And in 2018, cruising in Alaska reported about 3.8 million port of call cruise passenger visits, or approximately 61% of all port of call cruise visits in the entire U.S., making Alaska the number one cruise destination. This is a very important route. However, over the last 3.5 decades, Canadian governments appear to have taken the industry for granted, so much so that when Alaska reached out to Premier Horgan and Prime Minister Trudeau to find a way around the Canadian government's COVID closed border rules, neither leader even returned the call or email. So, rather than sit by and do nothing, Senator Mike Lee of Utah introduced three bills to repeal the PVSA entirely, saying it is blatantly Canada first and it needs to go. Alaskan Senator Lisa Murkowski introduced a bill that now allows cruise ships to bypass Canada while our border remains closed. I invited Ian Robertson, the CEO of the Greater Victoria Harbour Authority, to have a conversation that matters about why taking the cruise ship industry for granted is a bad idea. Ian, let's just start with that. Have we, or some of those in government, taken the cruise ship industry for granted, just believing that it was going to be there no matter what?
Well, Stu, first of all, thank you for inviting me to join you. And yeah, I couldn't agree more that both the province and the federal government really did take the cruise industry for granted. And as I've said repeated times and in my conversations with the premier, I said, do you really want to play Russian roulette with a $2.7 billion industry? That's what it's worth to British Columbia, not to mention the 17,000 jobs, well-paying jobs that it provides.
And how important is it, not just to those jobs, but to tourism as a whole? You know, I was reading just the other day that Victoria tourism, well, they're starting to see a bit of a bump as we're coming into the stages of reopening post-COVID. It's not, there is not this anticipation that they're going to have the volume of business that they're used to and need to be able to support those businesses. So how important are those cruise ship passengers?
Well, extremely important. I mean, if you want to put some dollars around it, it's worth $130 million to the local Victoria economy. But Stu, it spreads beyond that. In the conversations that I've had with local operators over the last couple of years now, we've lost the cruise season for 2020 and now for 2021. They're seeing a significant downturn in their business. And that it's interesting that the visitor economy here in Victoria allows businesses to remain open that Victoria residents enjoy. And I think that's what they're beginning to see with some of these businesses closing down. Now, I should add that we were very supportive of the Government of Canada's decision to close the ports to cruise when COVID first hit. There was no question that the safety of Canadians, the safety of British Columbians and the Victoria residents takes precedent. And we've been very supportive of that. But now, as we're all starting to come out of COVID and we're getting our second vaccinations, it's time to have a conversation about opening up our land and marine borders. And I've been very, assertive with the government in terms of what is the plan to open up the marine border. And right now, we know that the ports are closed to crews across the country until the end of February 2022. But it's incredibly important that the federal government, signal immediately to the cruise industry that they will be welcomed back in 2022 to give them some certainty.
Are you seeing any sign that they're willing to send those signals? Because as we've noted here in British Columbia, they'll say, okay, coming July 1st, these are what the changes in the rules are going to be affecting restaurants. But they wait until July 1st to tell those restaurants what the rules are, not giving the restaurant an opportunity time to prepare. Are you worried that we're going to wind up in that same situation when it comes to the cruise ship? By the time that we tell them what our plan is, it's too late.
Yes, I am very concerned. The cruise industry is not like a light switch. It's kind of like a dimmer switch. It needs time. It needs time to restart. And sending this signal is connected to the bill that was introduced by Senator Mike Lee to make the Passenger Vessel Services Act permanent. I really believe that if we can send a positive signal to the cruise industry that they will be welcome back in 2022, it might throw some cold water on this bill, because it will signal to the ports in Alaska who have been devastated by the lack of crews, but it will send a signal that they can be sure that crews will be back in 2022.
You know, when you take a look at that PVSA, its original intent was to help to protect American passenger ships. As we know, the cruise ship industry is dominated by companies that have their flags based somewhere other than the United States. There's a whole host of maritime legal reasons as to why they do that, but it puts them in the situation where they have to follow the rules of the PVSA. What we're looking at right now, and as you point out, if we don't send that signal early, you're right. It absolutely gives the Americans the kind of, impetus that they need to be able to argue that the act is, or that provision is, out of date.
Yes, absolutely. And we talk about, how the cruise industry needs time to prepare. I was talking with one cruise line executive, and as we know, these cruise ships are very mobile. They'll spend winters down in the Caribbean, in Mexico, over in Australia, Europe, and then in the summer season, they'll move them into the Alaska, the Pacific Northwest. And one executive was telling me that a decision can cost them millions of dollars. It's over $1.5 million that a cruise line has to pay for a ship just to go through the Panama Canal. So you can imagine the timing that's required, the forethought, the planning that needs to go in to give them some certainty is expensive. And so it is really important that the government send this signal that the cruise ships will be welcomed back in 2022. I think there's no risk to the government announcing that now, because certainly, as we're seeing, the cruise lines are starting up operations in Europe and in the Caribbean, and they've been operating quite safely. Yes, there have been some outbreaks on board, but it's limited to two or three passengers, and all the protocols are working. I think we have to understand that there are going to be continued outbreaks of COVID, whether it's at a resort, at a hotel, and even on a cruise ship. But from what I've seen, the cruise lines are really taking positive steps to ensure that passengers are safe, and in turn, safe at the ports that they call on.
Well, I think that you made an interesting point there, saying that in some resorts, on some ships, and in many other sectors of society, there are still going to be incidents of COVID. COVID isn't going away. The fact that we're vaccinated does not make us immune. COVID will still be around. But what remains to be, what remains true is that the entire world has ramped up protocols to limit the spread. And I think that we're collectively working towards saying, let's do everything that we can to contain this without killing the industries that are the backbone of our economies. And this is the tough rub. We have to be aware of the fact that you restrict or, you know, make it impossible for an organization to be able to deliver that service, it's going to go away. And then the jobs that are affected are remarkable.
That's right. And I think the other point to make here, Stu, is that while Victoria is a port of call, Vancouver is what we call a home port, like Seattle, where the passengers begin and end their journey. And some people have said, well, Vancouver is a little insulated because they're a home port. Well, I would say be careful, because Seattle has been very aggressive. They've got space down at their waterfront. They've already been talking about adding a fourth berth, a fourth terminal down in Seattle. And all it would take is for the cruise lines to, again, get a sense that British Columbia and Canada doesn't care about the industry. All it would take is for the cruise lines to strike a partnership with the Port of Seattle, and before you know it, additional berths are built, and it would make Vancouver obsolete. We've already got the challenge in Vancouver that the larger ships that are being deployed into the Pacific Northwest are taller. They can't fit under the Lions Gate Bridge, only at a very, very low tide. And they've also got some challenges getting under the line, the hydro lines and the Seymour Narrows. So, you know, we got to be careful that we just can't look at this as a port of call challenge for ports like Victoria and Nanaimo and Prince Rupert. I would say that Vancouver has to watch this very carefully, and in turn, the province and the federal government.
How important are Victoria and Vancouver within these routes for these cruise ship lines? Would they come here if it weren't for this provision? Or does it just happen to work out well that coming here is a nice addition for them to stop in here? But if they didn't have to come here, would they really?
Well, I'll speak to Victoria and then I'll speculate about Vancouver. You know, for Victoria, we are a happy surprise when visitors come here. A lot of the visitors will, or passengers will, choose their trip out of Seattle because it's a lot easier to fly into SeaTac from Austin, Texas, or Miami, Florida, than it is to go into Vancouver. So, A, airlift into Seattle plays a big role. And then secondly, visiting Alaska, visiting that state, is on the bucket list of almost every American. So it is about Alaska, and that's why they choose the trip. And we know that. And we know that we are a happy surprise. But when the visitors come here, they rave about the beauty, about what there is to do here in Victoria. And for a lot of them, it is a highlight. With Vancouver, it plays an important role because it is a beautiful city. I'm from Vancouver. It's a beautiful city, and it plays a role in being a home port where the passengers can begin and end their journey, and a bit of a different experience traveling out of Vancouver up the Inside Passage versus Seattle. But as I've said, you know, we can't take this industry for granted, and I think you know, we need to see that signal to the industry that they will be welcomed back in 2022.
You have spoken to executives with a number of the cruise ship lines. What are they telling you about their level of concern about the fact that we don't have the signals that say, okay, here's how you can plan? And then what does that do to them? You know, they're telling you what their concerns are. Can you share that with us?
Well, there was one conversation I had with a cruise line executive after the PVSA, the temporary waiver, was granted, allowing the ships to sail between Seattle and Alaska. And what he said to me was that, he said, Ian, you know, this temporary waiver, you know, you can't take the temporary part of it for granted, because this has gone through Congress, because it's gone through Senate, a lot more eyes are on this waiver, and people are questioning, you know, does it really protect American jobs in the industry, or really does it favor Canada? So that's my concern, that while, you know, Senator Lee, this has been, I think, the third time that he's tried to tackle the issue of the Jones Act and the PVSA waiver, boy, this time it might get a few more legs and a few more eyeballs on it this time. So that's why I'm concerned. And there's a lot of technical aspects to the PVSA waiver that people say, well, it won't pass. But, We all said that 3 or 4 months ago when we said this temporary waiver wouldn't pass, and look where we are. And I don't think we've ever been at a point where the industry has been in more uncertainty and more jeopardy. And what the cruise lines are asking us for, they're saying, we need a signal from your government that cruise will be welcomed back in 2022, because we are beginning to plan our 2022 schedule. And so it's incredibly important that that signal be sent to the industry that they will be welcomed back in Canadian waters in 2022.
You know, Ian, one of the other things that I have heard, and I don't know whether or not you can confirm this, is these ships aren't just sitting around waiting. And in addition to that, during COVID, far more ships were decommissioned than maybe we're aware of. So it's not like there is an abundance of, ships that are available to fill a void should there be this quick turnaround or last minute. Are you hearing that there are fewer ships on the water now?
Well, as we're speaking and the industry begins to ramp up, yes, there are fewer ships. But, I know that through the last number of years, the last 4 or 5 years, the industry has had record new ships being built. So I think it was even if COVID hadn't hit, you would have seen some of these older ships retire. So that wasn't too much of a concern for me, is that, as I said, there were a record number of new ships being built and are being deployed. And the industry is eager to get back on its feet. As we're talking, more ships are being deployed into Seattle. Just a few days ago, there was a test ship that left Seattle to cruise up to Alaska with 400 volunteer passengers on board to work through all the safety protocols. I even was on the understanding that they were even going to, mock a COVID incident and how they would handle that, how they would airlift someone off the ship and where they would go. So the lines are taking this very seriously because they know they've really only got this one shot and they got to get it right, because my gosh, if there were another serious situation, it could be crippling for the industry. So they've really done their homework. And I might even say that, cruising may be one of the safest places to be, given all of the protocols that are being put into place.
You know, there are some people who might say, oh, okay, so what, Ian? So we missed this year. The request from Alaska was, can we just touch in for a port of call so that we meet that provision within the Jones Act, the PVSA, and then move on? What's the economic benefit to Victoria? But aren't there quite a number of jobs that are associated with docking that ship and the associated services that would go with that? So there is an economic loss just because the ship, as you just pointed out, is going to sail right on by.
Yeah, there are. There here in Victoria, there are a number of other reasons why the ships come in here. I know that a lot of recycling takes place off the ship. It also employs well-paying jobs by the stevedores to bring the ships alongside. And so there is a significant economic benefit, not to mention the port dues that are paid to Transport Canada. So, yes, there has been an economic loss, but we realize that having this conversation 3 or 4 months ago would have been a tough one, just be given the situation we were in with COVID. And at that point, we weren't doing well with vaccinations. We hadn't ramped up at the time. So, I think a lot of us had already planned for the fact we weren't going to see ships in 2021. And a lot of us have gotten used to that. But for us right now, it's really looking ahead to 2022 and doing everything we can to send a signal that cruise will return in 2022. It's not only important for the cruise industry, it's also important for the operators here in Victoria, the operators in Vancouver, all of those businesses that rely so heavily on cruise to pay the bills, to feed their families.
What do you want to see happen here in the next month or two that demonstrates that both the provincial and federal governments are paying attention and that they're sending the right signals to the cruise ship industry, but also to our American counterparts?
Well, I must say, I've in the last month, I've been very pleased with the support we've received from the provincial government. I think the province and our government now understands the gravity, and that people won't just come to Victoria. They now understand how Victoria fits into all of this. But what I would like to see is a call to Minister Algabra to announce in the next few weeks that the interim order banning cruise ships will be lifted as of November 1 of this year. That will send a positive signal to the industry that they will be welcomed back in 2022.
Are you receiving any indication that will happen?
I've been receiving information that our voice, the collective voice of the industry, has been heard loud and clear. And right now, as I'm sitting here, I've got my fingers crossed and my toes crossed that maybe we'll get some information very, very shortly, Stu.
You know, well, it sounds fun to say that you got your fingers and toes crossed. It is not the kind of business plan or projection that you want to be taking forward. You want to know that people are paying attention and they're actually taking those concrete steps to make sure that we can really ensure that we get those ships back in so that everybody can benefit from it.
Yeah, absolutely. As I said, I think, you know, I've seen that the province understands the situation, understands that that this is an important industry. What we haven't heard is that same level of assurance from the federal government. And that's what we need to see, and we need to see it soon.
Were you caught off guard when you saw the federal government seemed to be unaware of this?
Yes, I was. And again, at the time, I was disappointed with the response from the province, and I was disappointed with the response from the federal government. I mentioned that it's worth $2.7 billion to the British Columbia economy. It's $4 billion to the Canadian economy. And, you know, you can't replace a $4 billion industry overnight. So, yes, I was very disappointed that night at the time the province or the federal government did not take this seriously and engage their American counterparts. There certainly, as you said at the top of the story, there was considerable effort on the part of the U.S. government at different levels to reach out, and no one was returning their calls.
I also know that it has an impact on you. There, you know, the cruise ships aren't there, the passengers aren't there. It has an impact on you and the and your ability to continue to maintain the harbor in a way that plays a positive role. And so I'm hoping that we can see a return to some sort of normalcy there that can help you also, you know, make sure that the Inner Victoria Harbor in particular really has that look and feel about it that we've all come to really appreciate and enjoy.
Well, you're right. We are a community-based organization, a not-for-profit. All of the surpluses that we earn goes right back into supporting and maintaining the community amenities that are so important to Victoria residents and visitors. The breakwater, Fisherman's Wharf, the Lower Harbor Causeway right in front of the Empress Hotel and the Ledge. And without crews, that represents over 70% of our revenue, I have some grave concerns about our ability to maintain those amenities should we not see a signal.
Well, I appreciate all that you do in contributing towards the beauty of the Inner Harbor, but also I really appreciate the fact that you're willing to step up and say, look, let's not take this industry for granted. We have to continue to make sure that this concern is heard and addressed. Thanks for joining me, Ian.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me, Stu.
It's great. Thank you.